Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to Coaching Coordinator Podcast. Today, we are focused on the hiring and firing process, something we're going to be talking about here on the podcast over the next couple weeks as we prepare for that season of the year, the hiring season. So whether you're an assistant looking to change jobs or hook on with a different program, or you are out in the market for a head coaching job, we're going to focus on some of those things. And joining me today is Dr. David Hoke, who has done a number of things in athletics, specifically serving as a director of athletics at Eastern Technical High School and Lock Raven High School. 16 years accumulated there. He's been a past president, vice president, and executive council member of the Maryland State Athletic Directors Association. Over 630 articles he's published on various topics involving athletic administration and coaching, and just a wealth of knowledge on this subject. So, Dr. Hoke, we're excited to have you here today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I'm sure you've seen over the course of your years a lot of things done really well and a lot of things that probably left you shaking your head thinking, I can't believe that guy said that in the interview or did that in the interview. And so what we're trying to do today, Dr. Hoke, is identify some of those things and help guys out for preparing for interviewing for a job. And with that in mind, I guess maybe you could share a couple stories, that things that were in your mind a little bit nightmarish.
Absolutely. And at any point as I'm going through this, if you think of something else, please throw it out and we'll adjust and try to answer that question. Let's start with two generalities. And the generalities are that coaches should be, when they're playing a game, they're going to scout. And maybe they scout their opponent two times or three times, whatever they're able to do, and then they take that scouting report and then they transfer it into a game plan, and that game plan then becomes the basis of how they plan their practices for 4 or 5 days. That's called preparation. You want to go and you want to find out all the little details. You want to be thoroughly prepared for that next opponent. So the one generalization would be for any coach looking for an interview, whether it be for a head position or whether it be for an assistant's position, whatever it may be, is take that same approach for the interview, and that is scout, prepare, and plan. So the first reaction might be, well, how do I scout? Well, what you're going to try to do is call friends, call colleagues, do whatever you have to, but find out a little bit about the school, the community, the type of parents they have, the type of athletes they have, how things have gone over the last couple of years. They might have had a problem, for example, with sportsmanship. I'll bet that that issue comes up. Now, they may not mention it per se, but that issue of sportsmanship will come up in the interview. I guarantee it, because that's a problem they're trying to overcome. So the first key to this in the general approach is make sure you've done your due diligence. Make sure you've done your homework so you know something about that school before you ever walk in for the interview. And then prepare. You have to anticipate certain questions. And I'll gladly offer a couple ideas on that a little later. But prepare. Don't walk in and try to do it off the cuff. And it's very, very much like getting ready for your next football game, whether it be a Friday evening or Saturday, whenever you normally play, you're taking the same approach with the interview. And then the second general thing that I would suggest would be that around the country, there are 19,800 high schools that have athletic programs. I cannot sit here and say that every one of those follows the philosophy of education-based athletics, but many do. So I think it's incumbent upon any new coach going in for any level of interview to be able to understand education-based athletics and to be able to embrace it, because more and more high schools around the country take that approach. And so there are any number of great articles out there. There are conferences. Do whatever it takes, but understand the number one objective in education-based athletics is not winning. Now, that may sound strange to hardcore coaches or longtime coaches. So you want to prepare to win. You want to strive to win. You want to enjoy winning. That they keep a score for that. That's the purpose of a game. But if that's all you're doing, you're missing the boat, because education-based athletics is based upon the concept that the growth and development of young people is the number one objective. And it's not sports specific. Yes, as a football coach, you have to teach tackling and blocking, and if you're a quarterback, how to pass the ball. I get all that. But the number one objective is to teach lifelong skills and values, such as sportsmanship and leadership and perseverance and compassion and humility, and the list goes on and on. And if those things aren't being taught, then you're not embracing education-based athletics. And to conclude this early introduction part of it, there was a national figure, a national director, who stated it very, very clearly that if in your coaching you don't include those things in your coaching, there's no reason to have that sport involved in any high school program. And that's a heck of a statement. So there has to be educational value in everything we do. And if there isn't, boy, you're barking up the wrong tree. So as an athletic administrator, that's what I was looking for. Oh, sure, we're going to get into questions about what's your philosophy. That's all good. But the character of the person and whether that person is a good fit for your student athletes is so much more important. And so there were more interviews that were ruined because the person didn't understand that than those who helped themselves. So those are the two basic general things. And so are there stories? Sure. Let me give one good quick example. Early in an interview, it's quite common for an athletic director or a committee, whatever approach they take in an interview, to ask that candidate, tell me a little bit about yourself. Now, the purpose of that is to allow the candidate to relax a little, to say a few things, because they're going to get tougher questions coming up. So give them a chance to relax. But just as I gave the original general idea about scouting and planning and preparing, you want to prepare for that opportunity too, because too often candidates say some of the wrong things at that time. And here's a specific example. I'm interviewing, and ironically, for a head football coach, I'm interviewing a candidate, and I offer him this opportunity. Please take 2 or 3 minutes and tell me a little bit about yourself. The very first thing he says is, well, the school I'm at right now, I don't get along very well with my athletic director. Oh, my goodness. The red flag goes up. And we haven't even gotten to the first question.
Right.
And the red flag goes up immediately. And I'm thinking, why the heck did you just say that to me? What he didn't know was I knew his athletic director very well. And his athletic director, in my opinion, in my professional opinion, was a very good professional. He did things the right way. And so what that statement said to me was, wait a minute, if you can't get along with him, how are you going to get along with me?
Right.
Because I have standards. I have expectations. We have policies. We have procedures. And if you can't fit into your current school, how do you think you're going to fit in here? And that's the way the interview started. And it really never gathered much steam thereafter, because that was a heck of a poor introduction. Mm-hmm. And there's one other quick one that I'll offer. Same type of thing. Matter of fact, it was in the same set of interviews. The candidate says, well, I'm going through a very difficult divorce. And it's some days for me, it's very, very emotional. And I'm thinking, I don't know that you should have told me that. Because a few years earlier in our school, we had a coach in a similar situation. And that coach brought his emotions onto the practice field. And our kids, our players, were very, very much affected by this. And knowing that, I'm thinking, do we want to place our kids in another one of those settings? I don't think so. So there are things that in that first little opportunity, you don't want to go and say.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to do is use that time to be positive, energetic, enthusiastic, and it takes a little thought and preparation. It should not be off the cuff. And so as a consequence, yes, some of the candidacies were ruined right there in that initial 2 or 3 minute segment, and they never recovered from it. That's a tragedy. That's really too bad.
I think that's a really good point that you make there. You certainly want to start this positive. I mean, you're going to make your first impression in the first couple of minutes. So being energetic, showing the positive side of your personality is very important there. And I think also you bring out the important point that you have to really prepare for this like you would a game. And I would suggest some things that I've done in the past that really worked for me to help me understand a program. Number one, I always went back, I would look at how long was the previous coach there. Maybe there was a series of coaches, but I'd usually go back and look at their records over the years, try to figure out, okay, when was the last time they won a championship, were in the playoffs, et cetera. I think the record starts to tell you a little bit about the program. But then digging into some of the things that they have on their website, or potentially now you could look at social media of that coach or of the athletic program or of that particular team and learn a little bit about that. And then in addition, I think it's important, too, to understand who you're going to be sitting down in front of. And I don't know how you feel about this, but I never felt shy about asking the athletic director, who am I going to be meeting with in these interviews? And sometimes they would tell you, other times they might give you something general about, well, you're going to meet with the principal. There's going to be a representative from the booster club. There's going to be a parent. There's going to be somebody from the community, et cetera. How do you feel about that question as you're preparing for that interview and maybe you're talking to the athletic director to set it up?
I think you bring up a great point, and I think that's critical. In any setting, you want to know who you're going to deal with. And I think I started by saying that there were times when I would do the interviewing alone as an athletic director, and there were other times where we had a small committee, and you are absolutely correct. One of those individuals would be my principal. There might be a parent. There might be a booster club member. You're absolutely correct. It's critical to know the dynamics and who you're actually going to sit down and speak with. Not that the questions are going to be any different. If I'm doing my job as an athletic administrator, I've prepped my principal and the booster club member, and we have a set standard number of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And they may alternate, and they may ask a question or two, but they're coming from this stock group of questions that we are going to ask all candidates. So even I've done my part where I've organized the committee, and we've done our preparation, and we're not going to deviate from that preparation. But for the candidate, you're absolutely correct. It's imperative that they know that, hey, these are the five people that are going to be there, and these are the groups that they represent. And you might even add, this is why we're going and doing this. Over the course of my time doing this in 16 or 17 years, there were some that were more high profile or important, not important in terms of the position, but important in terms of how the community felt or how things have developed at school. So over that time, there were some occasions when I was solely responsible for interviewing, and then there were other times when it was best served by a committee. And so I think you're absolutely correct. Candidates should get a better sense and a feel of who am I actually meeting with. And if you can find out why, that's also very helpful. The more information that you have and that you can plan for, the better off you are in that interview setting.
When we're looking at that situation, I know one of the things I would do, knowing that, okay, I'm going to meet with six people. Maybe that was some of them individually, some of them in a group, but overall I have six people who are going to be in on my interview. What I would usually do is send along my portfolio, which would share, it might share my coaching philosophy. It might share some things on how I build my coaching staff. I would usually give an overview on the X's and O's, though I've found in most of these interviews, those are things you rarely get asked about, but felt it was important for me to share some things there as well. And so I would send those in advance so they had a chance to learn about me, that they weren't necessarily coming into that interview cold, that they got more than what's in black and white on my resume and something that was just a more dynamic piece of content, a portfolio about myself. How have you seen that employed over the course of your career with the candidates you've interviewed?
Again, I think you make a great point and well made and well taken. There's another aspect. You want them to be able to read it, and that's great, and that's good. But it also demonstrates something. It demonstrates that you've thought through the process and you're prepared. So indirectly, subtly, you're letting them know that this is important to me, I've prepared, I'm ready to go, and you've given them that subtle message. Because you're correct, in the interview, you don't have time. You're not going to go into all the little gritty details of your philosophy. A common question, and it's one which, if you can allow me to expand upon just a little bit, is it is very normal for either the AD or the committee to say, can you briefly describe what your offensive philosophy is, or what your defensive philosophy, or overall, it doesn't really matter. I'm not really so much concerned what the actual philosophy is. Now, that may be a strange statement, but what I am more interested in hearing is, can you clearly and concisely explain it? And the reason why that's important is any coach is going to have to, in turn, do that, explain it to the players and their parents. And if you cannot, in the interview session, clearly explain it to me or to the committee, how can we expect that you're going to be able to do that with the two most important groups, players and parents? And so that question isn't so much where, and let's use football examples. Even though I was a basketball coach prior to being in athletic administration, I watch the NFL, I watch college games. I know what a pro set is. I even know what a wing T is. So I don't really care is a wrong term. I'm not really concerned what you believe in. I want to know, can you clearly and concisely explain what you believe in? And here's a classic example. And again, unfortunately, it was for interviewing a head football coach. I asked the question, can you please briefly describe what your offensive philosophy is? And again, I'm open-minded. I don't really, whether it's the wing T or triple threat, I don't really care what he's going to explain. And I won't mention what he did explain. So he says, I really like and I believe in, and he gives his example. And I said, oh, that's great. Can you please tell me why? He couldn't. He could not put in simple words why he believed in that offense. And the red flag just immediately went up, like, oh my goodness, you're using an offense because you like it, but you can't explain why it's important. Mm-hmm. That's not good. Because again, our parents are not going to stand for that. You have to convince your athletes that this is the best thing since sliced bread, and they're going to be super successful because they buy into your program. And you can't, in my terms, explain it to me? That's not good. So regardless of what your offensive philosophy is, you need to be able to, in an interview, clearly and concisely explain it, because that's what the committee or the athletic director is looking for, regardless of what it is. I'll give one quick example in basketball. So obviously I interview basketball coaches. Now, I have preconceived ideas because I coached basketball for 24 years. But my purpose was not to say, well, you don't meet my philosophy, therefore, no, that's not the point. Again, it was, can you clearly explain what it is? And as long as that candidate could do that, they didn't have to agree with my philosophy. Because I'm not going out onto the court and coaching with his players. But the important thing was, can you, and the side effect of that is, it's called communication. If a coach cannot communicate effectively with players and coaches, doesn't matter what the philosophy is, you're doomed for failure. So in the interview, I am looking to find out, can you clearly communicate why that philosophy is important? Why do you believe in that offense? Why do you believe in what you're doing? And if you can't do it in a simple manner, in an effective manner, I have doubts whether you can do that with our parents and our kids. That's the most important reason for asking that question.
I would like to add to that what we talked about before with preparation. And if you've really done your work and understand the clientele, right, the guys you're going to coach, and like you said, the parents as well, you can start to formulate that, well, you know, I know that Billy plays this position, and I see he would fit in our offense here or in our defense here, and here's why. And, you know, we live in an era now where actually through huddle, we could see a lot of the highlights of every single team, high school team in the country. So we start to get that idea. You could go to the newspaper, see some stats, potentially read about players, et cetera, and things they've done in the game, and understand who these athletes are. And you can specifically start to say, well, I know we have this player. I know we have this group coming back. We can build around this guy because he's playing this position in this offense. And I think that resonates with the committee members or with the athletic director or whoever you might be sitting down with, that, again, you've done your homework and you understand not just why you're running your offense, but why you're running it with this group of kids as well.
Oh, absolutely. That goes back, to one of my original generalizations is you need to understand the school and the players and the program and the whole routine. There was a candidate, several years ago, who came in and he outlined his program, and the first thing that was in the back of my mind was, you don't have the slightest idea what our kids are like. I'm not a football coach, but that's not going to work here. It's not going to work here because I see at that particular point, I was 6 years into my stay at that school, and I saw the kids in the hallway. I saw the kids at practices, and he is prescribing something that simply isn't going to fit with our kids. And so it's a great philosophy, and maybe it would work at other schools, but it's not going to work here because we have a different type of kid. And that's not good, bad, or indifferent, but our kids came from our school was at that particular point upper middle class, and the type of kids we had with what he was proposing to do was just night and day. And so had he done his homework a little bit, and I'm not suggesting that a candidate should totally eliminate their philosophy, but if you're trying to come into our school, into our community, and are rigid with that philosophy, it may not work because you're getting a different type of kid in our school. And I must repeat, that's neither negative or positive, right, or that's just the reality that there are certain communities where, or even let's go to the size of the school. Mm-hmm. We were a very small school. Well, you're going to play schools that have a much larger student population, and they have more to draw from, and maybe you can fill those positions with different type of players. At our school, this is what you have. And if you can't make do with what you have, that's it. And he never quite understood that in the interview. He was very, very rigid in his philosophy. And while I think the philosophy may be a decent philosophy, it really didn't fit our school. And that's where it goes back to do your homework, know something about the school you're – and matter of fact, prior to accepting the invitation for an interview, if you don't think it's going to work out, you as the candidate – you have a choice of saying, thanks for the offer, but I'll pass on the interview. Mm-hmm. Because those kids, those families, that school has been around a long time and will continue to be around. And so we need somebody to come in to understand what our kids are like and take them to the next level, because they're still the same kids. in the same family, in the same community.
Dr. Hoke, when I look at some other things that could come up over the course of the interview, and I have had interviews where I actually got on the board and drew up X's and O's, but again, most of them I had not. Really, a lot of the time they will, and I think you mentioned this before, they will ask questions about things which they perceive have been challenges to their program, potentially issues within their program. Like you said, maybe it was a sportsmanship issue. Maybe there's other things they've been dealing with. So understanding and going and doing that preparation, understanding what might come up, even if a hypothetical, kind of have to have some answers to it. And I would say that the younger coach isn't going to be able to share necessarily all the time examples of, well, I did this in this situation, but understanding that you would have a plan and showing that at the very least that's something that you can attack and there's a plan of attack for that would be important. What types of things do you usually see coming up for candidates in the course of an interview that might be either those hypothetical questions addressing common problems or specific things that maybe affect a program?
That's a great point. Let's deal with a couple of them. I mentioned the word sportsmanship. In this day and age, that's going to be involved in the interview at some point. And let's assume that an athletic administrator is forthright and up to date and understands what's going on, and that athletic director is able to again sit down with the principal and the booster club president and lay all this out. It would not be in their best interest, me being an athletic director, to ask a question like, well, where does sportsmanship fall within your philosophy? Most candidates should be able to handle, that's like lobbing a softball to them and saying, hey, can you hit this? Most candidates are going to handle that. So a better in-depth insight question would be, here's a scenario. How would you handle it? Again, even if you're a young coach, you may not have firsthand information, but how would you handle it if this occurred on your watch? What steps would you take, and what would you do to prevent it from happening in the future? And so I think going into an interview, you really do need to prepare for something like that. Sportsmanship on a high school level is an immense topic, and you'd be foolish to think that it's not going to come up in an interview, because it's going to. You just don't know exactly how the question will be phrased. So in your preparation for an interview, you might think about, well, this school had this problem with, and it may not even be the school that you're interviewing at, but in the news, in the newspapers, in the media, whatever, pick out a couple of sportsmanship incidents and try to prepare what would you do if that happened in our setting. Because sure enough, that question in some form is going to be asked. In like fashion, one of the favorite questions I like to ask would be, give me an example. And again, you don't need a lot of experience for this. You could have finished your first year of coaching, and this should have been there. And that would be, share with us a teachable moment that you used with your team. In that entire season, even if you've only coached one season, if you didn't have at least one teachable moment, I'd have to be thinking, why not? What have you been doing? Why haven't you had teachable moments? And so it's a very insightful question. Instead of saying, how would you use teachable moments, or have you ever used it? Now you don't make the question that simple. You turn it around and you say, please share an example. And again, I think a good candidate has to go in thinking, aha, what happens if they ask me for a teachable moment? And if you're in coaching and you haven't used teachable moments, one would question, do you understand what education-based athletics is? And if you can't come up with a teachable moment, then that athletic administrator or that committee may say, wait a minute, this may not be a good fit for us. So I think there are certainly, let's go to another one. And this is not simply a football issue. This is across the board. But you'd better expect that somebody may bring up the topic about what are you going to do to prevent hazing And if you don't, or the abuses of social media. In this day and age, you'd have to be awfully naive not to understand that social media has invaded many of the aspects of athletics. So whether it be hazing or bullying or social media, you need to be prepared in that interview of how are you going to work against it, how are you going to prevent it, and if it does happen, what steps are you going to take? What are you going to do about it? That's at the forefront in many athletic programs right now. And back to the original statement that I made, you have to be prepared. And so to walk into an interview and to be caught off guard by that is not a good approach. Since you're allowing me a great deal of freedom here and flexibility,
sure.
One of the things I always did, now as a basketball coach, I interviewed for a lot of jobs, and let's say they interview five. One person's going to get the position, and four others aren't. So I was in that situation any number of times in my life. I didn't always get every position I applied for. Many times I was one of those four who didn't. But the key point of that is that when I would walk out to my car after the interview, the very first thing I did was I got a pad of paper out and a pen. And, of course, in this day and age, it could be done with a laptop or a digital tablet or whatever. But I would try to jot down all the questions that I could remember they asked me. Mm-hmm. And then quickly, how did I answer them? And over a period of time, if you save all these, you're going to come up with a pretty good basis for questions that they're asking. Now, over the years, the types of questions may change. But you can then do a self-analysis, and you can say, geez, you know, I didn't do real well on that second question. And so I'm not suggesting that somebody should memorize an answer. A stilted answer is not good in an interview. However, by me writing down those questions and keeping them and looking at them prior to the next interview helped me gain a great deal of confidence and an assuredness that, hey, I'm on the right page. And if there was ever an answer that I didn't think I did a great job with, I could work on improving. And I don't mean giving a false answer. That's not right. What I'm suggesting. But what I am suggesting is maybe there was a way in which I could have explained it better. Maybe I could have made my point in a more effective manner. And so after every interview, you want to grow and learn from that. Because mathematically, there are going to be far more who don't get the job than who ever do get the job. And in order to keep moving up that ladder, in order to increase your percentages, you want to grow and learn from each interview possibility. And matter of fact, that's the way a person should look at it, as this is an opportunity to learn more about myself. This is an opportunity for me to improve my interview skills. This is an opportunity for me to be able to understand the dynamics of this better. So if you have a chance for an interview, take it, but learn from it. And a good way that I, again, even though it was basketball and not football, I would immediately, the first thing I sat in that car was jot everything down. And then if I thought of something else on the way home or when I got home, I'd jot that down. And this was pre-laptop days, but I would actually take the notes and I'd put them in a folder and I kept adding to that folder. And now in my preparation for the next interview, I had a pretty good basis for getting ready for that next interview. And so I think that's, again, let's call it a practical little tip that if someone's going into this interview season, take advantage of each opportunity and learn from it. And so that next time out, you improve. And by the way, don't we do that in coaching?
Yep.
Don't we do that with our teams? We absolutely do. If a team has made mistakes in that last game, in a business-like fashion, you're going to go in with that team and you're going to analyze them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to break it down and you're going to come up with drills and you're going to practice and you're going to have repetition and you're going to try to improve. Well, the same thing happens in an interview.
When we're looking at the interview, I know from time to time, you're either going to get a question which maybe wasn't worded in a way that you completely understand it, or you might potentially be stumped for a second. Let's handle each of those separately.
Sure.
The question maybe that you don't understand. What's the best way to go about getting that rephrased and maybe not going down a road where you think they meant something but you weren't quite sure? How should you handle that?
Well, let's start with the second part of what you just presented first. Never answer a question that you don't fully understand. So rather than throw out an answer and it doesn't really match the question, take a couple seconds. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with saying to that individual, the athletic director, or the committee saying, could you please, I'm not sure what exactly that question means, could you restate it in a different fashion? There is nothing wrong with saying that and doing it just in that tone, in that fashion, saying it very politely, saying, you know, I'm confused by that question. I really didn't understand that question. And actually, that scores points. Instead of using BS, you are actually seeking for clarification, and you would like to answer the question in a straightforward manner. And that person, the AD or the committee, is going to highly respect that. So by all means, simply and clearly state, could you please restate the question? I'm not sure what you're asking. There is nothing wrong with doing that. And matter of fact, it's to your benefit. You really should do that. The other part of what you just laid out was, I'm going to make a generalization, and generalizations are wrong, but most athletic directors and most committees are not there trying to trip you up. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they're trying to get insight into you and your philosophy and how you're going to interact with your student athletes. So what they want you to do is provide good answers. They want you to describe what you're going to do, because at the end of the day, they have to evaluate your answers versus the other four that they may be interviewing. So what they're trying to do is to rank order who best fits their program. So they want you, they absolutely want you to give the best possible answer that you can so that they can evaluate it fairly. And as a consequence, there is nothing wrong with asking for a restatement of a question.
The other opportunity that I see, Dr. Hoke, is at the end of an interview. I know everybody always gives that opportunity of, do you have any questions for us? And having conducted interviews myself, I always thought it was a missed opportunity if that interviewee said, no, I think I understand everything about your program, or anything like that. What would you suggest are the best types of questions to ask when you are given that opportunity?
Amen. I think that's another great point on your part. Let me answer that, and then let me give you two or three examples of how not to approach it. I'm going to use the word again, opportunity. This is a candidate's opportunity to close the deal. The nature of your question is going to tell a great deal. Have you thought through things? Have you done your homework? And so to have a good question or two good questions in your back pocket, not literally in your back pocket, but in the back of your mind, is a great way to close the interview. And you used the term earlier that what you're trying to do is to create a good positive impression. Well, that closing question is the way to close the interview on a positive fashion. So let me give you one or two examples which were not good, and then I'll come back and close up. Ironically, this was for a head coaching position. I offered the candidate, and it was only me, it was not a committee. I offered this individual, I said, okay, we've had a great discussion. We've talked about a lot of different things. Do you have a question or two that you might have for me or for the school about the school setting? His very first thing he said was, well, when do you normally get paid? And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, we've just gone through an hour here discussing philosophy and so forth, and your biggest concern is, when will you get paid? That's not exactly what I wanted to hear. I would have loved to have heard something to the effect that, boy, I really care about working with young people. I like to see them grow and develop, and I get really excited about being in athletics. But no, it's when am I going to get paid? Followed up very quickly with, when is the first holiday that we have off during the season? And I'm going, holy heck, this guy's worried about what days he's going to get off and when he's going to get paid. Is this really the person we want leading our program?
No.
Is this his highest priorities? And no, that's just not it. So another, let's call it downfall, would be never ask, well, how many candidates are you interviewing? No, that's none of your business. Mm-hmm. It's our business. I always had in the back of my mind what I thought was a good optimal number, but no, it's not a good logical question. You're here again, and I'm going to use this term again, you're here for the opportunity. It has nothing to do with who else we're interviewing. There's an element involved there. When you go into an interview, control what you can control, and that means giving good, clear, straightforward answers, being enthusiastic, being involved, demonstrating your passion. You can control that. What you cannot control is how many and who else the committee or the AD is interviewing. That's beyond your control, and therefore, you never bring that into the discussion. And then lastly, and I think this is a legitimate question, is when do you expect a decision will be reached, and how will you notify people? I think that's a legitimate question. And so it's important, I think, for a candidate to understand that there is a time frame, and they may, this committee or the AD, may have a couple more candidates to interview. But here's a general rule of thumb. The person who is successful and will be getting the offer gets a phone call. The individuals who don't get the phone call and don't get the offer are usually going to get a letter. Nothing wrong with that. The line you probably don't want to cross as the candidate is calling back after the decision is reached and, why didn't I get the job?
Right.
Not a good thing to do. So absolutely correct. How you end the interview, the nature, the scope, and the tone of your question, and it goes back to the very beginning. When that AD or the committee gives you the opportunity to say, okay, take 2 or 3 minutes to tell us something about yourself, this is your final chance to conclude. And can you conclude on a high note, on a positive note? That's where you want to go. So, to finish up, what are some things that you could say? Oh, you could ask when the person who's offered the position, how much flexibility and how much input do they have on hiring the remainder of the staff?
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfectly legitimate question. What are some of the expectations that the community has on this new individual coming in? Perfectly legitimate question. So, again, if you prepare and you've done your homework, what you want to do is finish on the highest possible note that you can and ask good, intelligent questions and not one that reveals some more inner secrets about yourself.
Mm-hmm. That idea of closing things up, you've asked your final questions, gotten some answers from them. The athletic director says, okay, thank you for coming in today. Is there anything you want to do? Almost like a closing statement, I guess. You don't want to be long, obviously, but something that you might want to highlight or put in the mind of those people interviewing, whether it's an individual or a group.
Oh, absolutely. And again, you hit a key point. It has to be brief. It has, and not so much specific. Let's think in terms of general courtesy. Thank them for the opportunity to meet with them. That's critical. Common courtesy goes a long way. So simply saying, thank you for this opportunity, I sincerely appreciate it, you can end just like that. That's important. And then there's a step or two further. When you get home, and of course, email now makes things so much easier. When you get home a day or two later, send them a thank you email or a thank you note saying, again, I just want to thank you for the courtesy that you extended to me. Thank you for the opportunity to meet with you in the committee. You may not get the job, but in the long run, that may come back to help you because you never know when the job opens up again. Or let's take a more practical route. That athletic director may change schools and go to another school, and that may have an opening the next year. You may run into that person or those individuals again in the future. And the more courtesy that you extend to them, the more thanks and appreciation that you extend somewhere down the line, that's going to pay dividends. And I don't mean do it in a false manner, but sincerely thank them for the opportunity. Sincerely thank them for taking their time to meet with you. That's just invaluable, totally invaluable. And definitely follow up with a note or an email. And here's the last suggestion. Before you send an email, and this is for all communication, if you're in doubt about your wording, have somebody else read it first and make sure that it's the best worded possible message you can send. Because, again, you're being judged on that. If you send a message that is grammatically incorrect or poorly written, you're not forming a good lasting impression. So things like this that are so very, very important in your life, have somebody else, or write it out on paper first and have somebody else proofread it and say, you know, I don't think I'd use that word. Or, you know, that word's misspelled. And make sure that when you send that note or that email, that it's as best possible quality that you can, because that's going to pay dividends in life. Dividends in life. And you never know when your path is going to cross again.
I think that's a great point. And I remember back to my younger days interviewing for head coaching jobs, et cetera. And there were jobs early on that I didn't get, but I did such a good job in those interviews that I know athletic directors talked. And down the line, another job came open and was asked to interview for it. Heard you did a good job in this interview. We would like you to come and apply for our job. And I think when you have that opportunity, when you're asked by somebody to apply, you have a much better chance of getting the job. And in that case, I did get the job. So I think this is important, not just this is your first one, first interview especially, or you've done a bunch of them. Having a good impression, maybe you don't get the job, maybe you weren't the exact right fit for this community, and that's okay. But there will be opportunities down the line and people talk, especially today. Communication is so easy through all the digital forms that guys are going to talk and communicate, whether that's personally or electronically. And people are going to find out about you, whether that was positive or negative.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
Well, Dr. Hoke, I really appreciate you taking the time. You offered some great tips here today. I hope that those are useful for our guys who are going to go out and be looking for jobs right now. I would love to have you back and discuss some other topics on this in the future.
Sounds great. I thoroughly enjoyed my time, and I sincerely hope that it was beneficial for anyone that listens. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.